Thanks for listening to this Arrow FM podcast, shared on accessmedia.nz with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Good morning, Wairarapa. This is Anthony from Age Concern and our podcast, Aging with Attitude. Got two guests here today, and I'm really delighted to have both of them, beautiful ladies, with me today. And I actually let them introduce themselves to you.
Kia ora. Susan from Age Concern Wairarapa. Anthony's left half, right half, whatever you like to call it.
Keeps me on track, I think, Susie.
Absolutely.
And we have...
Amber Arkell. Kia ora, I'm Amber. I'm the General Manager of the Wairarapa Cancer Society.
A lot to talk about today, but before we get there, first, shout out to all of those who came to the Aging with Attitude Expo that was held in the beginning of the month. It was awesome. So thank you for all those storeholders who came and supported us, as well as the community who came also. And we had a fabulous time. I think there was about 600 people that came through that day. And also a big shout out to Chanel College.
Yes, awesome. Yeah. Fantastic.
Yep. Looking forward to more connection with them and listening to their beautiful sounds. So thank you so much, especially when it was the holidays, coming in the holidays. That was great. So thank you to Chanel College. One more shout out, and that's to my colleague, Deanne. Yep. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday, dear Deanne. Happy birthday to you.
I know it's a little bit late, but hey.
It's the birthday that keeps going. When you get older, it's really great to have like a week's worth of celebration, just, you know, so that you can really get into the, you know.
Is that a ladies thing?
Some of my colleagues expand it to a month. Yeah. It's birthday month.
Absolutely. I want to work with you. See you, Anthony.
Oh, that's... Yeah, I'm trying to get over the week, but my goodness. But if you have the opportunity, why not?
Why not? Yeah. Why not?
No. There was no euphemism in there, or double entendre. There was no there. But anyway, yeah, it's good to be back on the air. But also in saying that, another month in November will actually be the last time the show will be running. And so it's a bit sad for me, but there'll be others to take my place, I'm hoping. I'm looking at one in particular. she's not very helpful at the moment.
Yep. I have Monday-itis. Mondays are not good for me.
Yeah, but for myself, I'll be moving down to the South Island end of next month. So
it won't just be a sad day for you. It's going to be a sad time for all of us.
And the community.
I'm looking forward to going down to be with my daughter and her husband and to learn how to do some weaving and doing some revitalization of traditional techniques. So that'll be great. Anyway, that's enough about me. We come here today to talk with Amber. Amber, tell us a little bit about your story, actually.
Sure. You know, it's one of those things growing up in the Wairarapa, and I moved here. I'm the eldest of three with mum and dad from Wellington, and went to Opaki School from intermediate age, and then went on to St. Matthew's Collegiate, finished school, and then I wanted to be close to home, but not, you know, not too, you know, far away enough to feel like I was on my own, but close enough if I needed. So I popped over the hill to Palmerston North and went to Massey University, and then did a Bachelor of Communications degree and ended up in a role with MediaWorks Radio. Oh, nice. And selling radio ads, and nothing like being 21 and commission only to learn how to make some money.
And save.
That's right. And then anyway, long story short, over the years, made my way to Auckland. I was 25 and sales and marketing manager for Taurus Leather Company, a New Zealand tool belt manufacturing company, and was very, very passionate about tool belts and making these tool belts in New Zealand and working with the factory staff. Went and did a month overseas in Europe with my best friend, came back, turned 26, and on the 2nd of December 2015, at 26 years of age, was told I had stage 1 grade 3 breast cancer. Mm. So my world got a little bit flipped upside down, and I had, whilst it was an early grade breast cancer, being the age that I was, they wanted to throw everything at it. So surgeries, chemotherapy, the works, and ended up relocating halfway through chemo from Auckland to Christchurch and finished off treatment there. Ended up having a nipple sparing bilateral double mastectomy with immediate reconstruction as a preventative measure. So big decision. This is a real long story real quick because we've got much more important things to be talking about. And then got back into work and sort of finding my feet again, and you know, it's a real tricky one with a diagnosis because your world gets flipped upside down very quickly, and then you get to this point where they're like, okay, well, we'll see you in 6 months, or we'll see you in a year. So you've gone from this super, super intensive diagnosis and treatment plan, and then they're like, off you go. And that I found probably the hardest to navigate. And then sadly in 2018, despite everything that I'd done, I ended up with a small recurrence in the same breast, even though I'd had all the surgeries and everything like that. The specialist that I'm under now is believes that there was just something left over that has had a chance to grow back. So I ended up having surgery to remove that and then radiation treatment to follow. And that was 5-6 years ago that all went down, and I remained cancer free. And nice. And then sort of relationship breakdown, COVID, career changes. Loved Christchurch, but my heart just wasn't happy, and I felt the pull back home. I felt it, and my grandmother was here. She was up at Lansdowne. She had a diagnosis that really should have. She shouldn't have been with us within 6 months of her diagnosis, and we got 4 years. Mm-hmm. And I came home, and it was the greatest honour of my life to help her transition and transition over. And was right there with her. She's my soulmate and one of my very special people in my life. Mm-hmm. And she was a big draw card to come home, along with being with my family, to just kind of have a breather and figure out where to from here. Mm-hmm. 3 weeks later, General Manager of the Cancer Society Wairarapa came up, and I went, okay, I think this was why I needed to come home, as well as be with family. But being very career driven and love working, and but also this passion that I created through my experience with cancer. I blogged everything on a Facebook page called When Things Went Tits Up, and because aptly named.
Yeah.
And I was very open and honest about what I was going through and trying to shed some light on you know, the perceptions of breast cancer being something you just have later in life or need to think about. Self-advocacy, you know, being able to push for answers, being able to advocate for yourself, there were a number of times where I asked for second opinions, getting the strength to be able to do that and doing what was right for me, and being able to share that with other people to empower them to be able to do that for their own health. I did a lot around self-examinations and how to do a self-breast examination, and to not sit on your symptoms. You know, bowel cancer is incredibly aggressive if found late, but very treatable if found early. But no one wants to talk about their bowel health, you know, and that's so, so important. I love their slogan, don't sit on your symptoms, you know. Nobody knows your body like you do. So that became a lot of the underlying messaging in my blog and what I was trying to get people to do. Having been through the experience that I have, and then taking all of that and the career person that I was and my background, I went in for that interview and I said, I'm not leaving this room until I get this job. And I think they were scared of me and they said yes. So, and that was a little over 2 years ago, and what a whirlwind it's been for the Wairarapa Cancer Society in the last 2 years. Yeah. So, and here we are.
Yep. What was that slogan you said about the bowel cancer health?
Don't sit on your symptoms.
Don't sit on your symptoms.
Yeah.
I quite like that.
It's really good.
Yeah, as you said, if we are able to catch it early,
yep,
you know, we've got a chance.
Yeah.
But if we let it and sit on it,
yep,
those chances diminish really quickly.
Yeah. And I know it's really hard for people to talk about things. I mean, I've got to a point where I think I've had every part of my body looked at, examined, tested, checked, poked, prodded, you know, all those things, because I've just got to a point where I lost that naivety to my health as soon as I got told I had cancer.
Cancer, yeah.
And it lives with me. It's there. It's always there. I've recently had a bone scan because I had some hip pain. You know, here I am at 35 having a bone scan, worried that I've now got metastatic cancer. Like, it's always there.
Mm.
You just learn to, in terms of in your mind, as a survivor, trying to navigate life after, because you've lost that naivety that your body can go this, you know, can generate this, that you've been there. And you know, there's a lot of people living with cancer for many, many years. In fact, there's people who pass away with cancer not because of the cancer. You know, that's the times we're living in now. It has shifted, but obviously we all know someone in our lives who have been diagnosed and they're no longer with us, and that's a stark reality of it. But there are also people who get diagnosed, go through what they need to, and then are navigating life cancer-free as well. And it's trying to acknowledge that and hold space for everybody, because everyone deals with it differently.
I'm glad you brought that up, because as you rightly say, a lot of people have been able to journey through it.
Yeah.
But we don't hear those stories.
No.
And so we only think those who don't have much contact with those who have cancer,
yeah,
only think you get cancer, you die.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
But yep,
that's not the truth.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's not the truth. So it's good that you're here today to bring some shed some light on that.
I hope so.
And demystify some of the thinking that we have.
For sure. And, you know, I remember when I was first diagnosed, that was really hard for my parents to navigate that as parents of a child who's got that. And I remember Dad saying to me, a cancer diagnosis does not mean death.
Mm.
And that, I don't want that to be ignorant to those that do get told they have a diagnosis and it is terminal, because we in our centre, we see that every single day.
Mm.
What we don't see in our centre every day are the people who have been told they had cancer or went through a cancer diagnosis 20, 30, 40 years ago and are living their best life because they don't need our help.
Mm.
So we don't see those. So we are heavily tainted to seeing the people that really need our help.
Mm.
So we're seeing and hearing those stories more and more on a regular basis. But I hold on to those people who I hear, oh, I had cancer when I was 35. I had cancer when I was in my late 20s.
Mm.
And now they're in their 60s, 80s, you know, thriving, and that hasn't come back. You know, it can happen. So it's really nice as someone that got, for me personally, I really treasure and love hearing those people, their stories, because that gives me hope. Yeah.
Do they ever celebrate those stories during the cancer awareness weeks at all? Because that might be something that's...
It's definitely something that I think as cancer society we could do better to acknowledge. The survivorship space is not done well in our country. Cancer society, hospitals, whoever, Breast Cancer Foundation, Prostate Cancer, whoever you want to talk about, survivorship is not done well, and it is a really scary space. And I'm talking about survivorship from when you are released from your oncology care and they're like, right, we'll see you in a year, we'll see you in 5 years. You know, there's this real thing around hitting the 5 year mark, the 5 year cancer free mark. There's a real sort of thing around it, but the fear of recurrence is huge. Fear and actually Elaine, our support and information coordinator, is hosting a support group this week all around the fear of recurrence, because that is a real process, trying to navigate the fear that you're waiting on these scan results. This term scanxiety, you know, you've got anxiety, but scanxiety as you wait for those scan results. I've just been through it and it's awful. It's a roller coaster, because you are praying for the best and preparing yourself for the worst. And so it's not done well, and it's something that I obviously feel very passionate about, having been there, because I think there needs to be better resources through the hospital, through the Cancer Society, through whoever is working in the space to help people navigate life after.
Yeah, because there's nothing worse than waiting to hear the worst, is there? When, especially when you've got many years to, you know, to go, like yourself, it must be quite hard to
it's a process.
Work out a robust resilience, but not cut the and being able to enjoy your life, you know, and setting, you know, lifetime goals.
And, you know, it's been very strong for me lately. In the last probably 4 to 6 months, I've felt this real immense, just life is short, regardless of a cancer diagnosis or anything else. You know, life is so precious, life is so short. And trying not to get caught up in the small stuff, to be grateful for the basic things that are your family, your friends, your health, the things that make your heart happy, time, you know, money, gifts, all of those things. And this is someone who loves to give gifts as a way of showing love, you know. But actually, it's been very, very strong in my heart and in my mind in the last in the last wee while, just getting back to basics as to what life's all about. You know, I feel like I was 35 minutes ago. Now I'm 35. You know, where have the last 5 years gone? You know, where have the last nearly 10 years gone since I was first diagnosed? Like, life is just moving so, so quickly. And I just think it's a good reminder. And I share it because I think everybody gets it and everyone feels it, but then we get so caught up in the day-to-day.
Yeah.
So it's, I share it as a grounding reminder as to get back to basics, and life is short.
Yeah, you made me laugh when you said 5 years ago I was 30. I was thinking to myself, my youngest daughter is your age. And I'm going, where did that go?
Yeah, well, where did that go when she from her being a baby, eh?
Yeah, yeah. Where's that gone? What have I achieved in that time? You know, what has been the priority in my life? And so, as you said, is it really, do we have to chase all these things that are materialistic?
Yeah.
Or do we sit back and say, what is the priority?
Well, family? And look at you making the move to be with, you know, family and do those things. That, that's right. Yeah, it's important.
It is. It is. No longer about money or anything like that. It's, being happy.
Yeah.
Being able to invest.
That's right.
Yeah, so that's good. Anyway, you're the general manager, is that right? CEO?
GM. Yeah, GM. Or something along those lines. No.
You're the boss.
I'm one of a big team, be it from our centre team, our paid, you know, centre staff, through to our volunteer base of our local centre. And so there's a lot that happens in our little whuddy on 37 Te Ori Ori Road, right opposite the hospital. So perfect place. Mm. I'll just touch on terms of where we are actually is really special because our board, our charity board in around 2016, the Cancer Society Wairarapa has always actually rented offices around town. So I think Dixon Street was a well-known area and some other spots. And they always had this desire to be near the hospital. And it just made sense, right, in terms of what we're offering and to be there. And in 2016... 37 Te Ori Ori Road hit the market, and long story short, the board went to the owners and spoke with them, and all the other offices, the volunteers had a garden. It was called the Hope Garden, and they would look after it, and it would be a sanctuary for clients to go to. And this house sale went through, and it was purchased off Mr. and Mrs. Hope.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, so the Hope Garden has its rightful place at 37 Te Ori Ori Road, and our, you know, because our word as an organisation is hope. It's hope for a cancer-free future, it's hope for life after a diagnosis, it's hope for, you know, all the things that we want when we're in that space, that you've got to hold on to hope. So it just couldn't be more fitting that our Hope Garden is now in the residence of what was the family home for many, many years of the Hope family. Mm-hmm. So that's quite special.
Mm.
And we are an independent charity. So to be part of the Cancer Society national organisation, we are, whilst we're independent charity, we have to be part of a division. And part of the division, being part of that division, enables you to be part of the Cancer Society. So what I love at its core about the fact that that's set up is that we are community led, we are community funded, we serve our community, and everything that comes in through the door goes back out to support the Wairarapa. I really, really love that.
Yeah.
So we get no government funding. We are entirely community funded, but what it means is that the funds that we raise here in the Wairarapa to support our charity stay in the Wairarapa to go back into all of our services. And I really love that. Mm. There's not many there's not many organisations, Breast Cancer Foundation, Prostate Cancer Foundation, not poo-pooing their awesome mahi that they're doing, but just it's a different setup. Mm. And I think that that brings a lot of heart and a lot of care and a lot of love. So We have four centre team, myself as GM. We've got Elaine as our support and information coordinator. So Elaine's role is to work very closely with the clients who walk through our doors, understanding their unique situation and tailoring our support the best way for them. Now, our clients might not be just someone with a diagnosis. Our clients actually, sometimes when you're first diagnosed, you are actually so well taken care of in the health system in terms of appointments and the next thing that actually you've got so many people calling you. The last thing you want is someone from our team calling as well. Sometimes it's actually the spouse or the family, extended family, who are navigating their emotions that come with it. And so whoever our client is, it's about working with them, and that's Elaine's role, is to navigate that, advocate for them, put things in place and work with them closely, which is fantastic. Elaine's 30 hours a week, Tuesday through to Friday. Danelle is our volunteer coordinator, and she also does our finances as well, keeps everything tidy and in check. So Danelle's role is to work with the volunteers, communicate with them, organise their trainings, organise the drives. Anything volunteer related sits with Danelle's hat. Danelle's 20 hours a week, 3 days in the office, so that's her main volunteer focus, and then Thursdays from home to focus on making sure our accounts are all tidy and everything that needs to be. And then we've got Helen. She's our centre administrator. She started on 15 hours a week when we started a week apart 2 years ago. She's now 30 hours a week because probably, you know, her outputs are phenomenal, as is the rest of the team. And she's just a dynamo. She explains it that she has many fingers and many pies and does a bit of everything, which loves and keeps her busy brain, you know, nice and busy. And she's a powerhouse, and we're so, so blessed to have all of them. There's a lot of heart in terms of who they are. And then there's me in the I'm Monday to Friday and sometimes Saturday and sometimes Sunday and whatever needs to be done to get the job done, right? Mm. And then, of course, our extended team is all of our volunteers, because we couldn't do our operations without them. So that sort of makes up who we are in terms of as a centre.
Yep. So in terms of fundraising, how do you get the money?
Yeah, so fundraising is a big, big part of it all. And so Daffodil Day, is quite iconic. Mm-hmm. Most people know what Daffodil Day is all about. That's our annual street appeal that is done nationally. So we would have our pop-up shop. The thing is, people see Daffodil Day and hear it as Daffodil Day, which it is. But for us, it's the full month of August. Mm. So for us, it's the Daffodil Day campaign. So the Garden Fiesta, we went there and sold daffodils. We had sausage sizzles at the netball courts. We had the pop-up shop. We picked thousands and thousands, and many volunteers did as well, daffodils. And then we have Aramex who we bunch them at their shed, and then deliver them for free to businesses around the region. So, you know, that's a great way for businesses to support Daffodil Day as well. What else? We have the street appeal itself on the Friday and the Saturday, and the Vintage Car Club do their rally as well nationwide, and we're lucky to have the Wairarapa branch do their event. So collectively that makes up the Daffodil Day campaign. So she's a big month for us in August. And then
can you just run back through the different things again?
Yep,
you've got the
cars. Yep, so the vintage car rally. So any car enthusiast, that's always a popular event. They start in Martinborough and make their way up. The last 2 years we've gone to the Garden Fiesta at Clareville Showgrounds. This year we sold daffodils, which went really well. And when we go to those sorts of events too, you'll see our jars where we have people. They have the opportunity, there's a heart card, and there's the opportunity to write the name of a loved one on that card. So that could be someone who's no longer with us, someone who's currently going through treatment, or someone who has survived cancer. So it's a really nice way for people to acknowledge their loved one and just hold them in their mind, you know, because it just links in with who we are. So we do that while we're there as well. And then we do our fresh flowers, so the fresh flower daffodils. So that's a great way for businesses to get in and support, and it brightens up the office. Yeah. And Aramex locally deliver those for free for us, which is amazing and goes a long way. And it's such a sight, you know, when you see the bunching shed just full, like thousands, thousands and thousands and thousands, buckets and buckets of daffodils. It's all on our Facebook page if there's people who are Facebook savvy and want to see it, because it's stunning, absolutely stunning. And then we have our street appeal, which is when we've got the collectors out on the street collecting on our behalf. And we have our pop-up shop as well, which we've done the last few years, well, for some time, and trying to make that bigger and better each time. And then, of course, people can donate online, or schools get involved with non-uniform days or selling daffodils or whatever they want to do. And actually this year, ANZ nationally had three grants, three $5,000 sports grants, so for schools. So if the school raised $400, they automatically went in the draw, and then they did a draw nationwide of all the schools, and one of the three schools was Solway College.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so they're actually getting a $5,000 sports grant, and I think they're going to be getting some new basketball hoops.
Oh, nice.
So I'm waiting to find out about that, and then I can go down and see them. And but really, really cool that out of a nationwide campaign, one of our local schools
got
pulled out of the hat, you know. Yeah. You hear those things, but you just sort of, it's legit. So that was cool.
I like what you said in terms of, we call it Daffodil Day. This is the public.
Yep.
But it's a month.
It's for us in our operation, it's a month, yeah. So on average in the last sort of 20 years, Daffodil Day campaign has on average been around a $50,000 event for the local charity, or for us. And in the last, so our first Daffodil Day that we did as a team in 2022, we did about 64,000 for the campaign. And then last year we did about 70,000. And this year we're sitting at about 68,000. We get a little, ANZ do their national fundraising. And so we get a little bit of that as a, based on our population, which I'm hoping will be another couple $1,000s out of that. So she should end up being about a $70,000 campaign again.
Yeah.
But we're about a $400,000 operation. So you can see how Daffodil Day is important, super, super important, but to keep our doors open and do everything that we do, which we'll get into, I've created a monster, and now I've got to keep feeding it. So then our next event, which is pretty iconic and quite well known, is Relay for Life. So Relay for Life, we only do that every 2 years, though, because Relay is a massive, massive event on the community, for the community, by the community. If we did that every year, I think it would lose its novelty, for one, and it would be too much. It would be too, too much. We, as a team, because obviously it was our first Relay to organise last March. Last March. Yep, that's right, because our next one is next March. And it was, honestly, if you could bottle up the atmosphere at Relay for Life and give that instead of chemotherapy, it would cure cancer.
Mm-hmm.
That's how special it is. The energy, the attitudes, the turning up, the schools, they get so competitive. So if anyone doesn't know what Relay for Life is, Relay is a walking running event that starts at 4 o'clock in the afternoon on the Saturday and goes through till about 8 o'clock on the Sunday morning. And it's there's an oval track, and all the teams are around the outside, and each team has a team baton which has a tracking thing on it. So every time they cross over the start line, it tracks
How many
laps they've done. So can you imagine how competitive the schools are? They don't walk it. They don't even run it. They sprint it, and they will often actually have relays. So they will have people dotted around the track, and they relay it, and the schools are competing for that top spot of most laps, fastest lap. They're out of control. They are out of control. It's almost a safety hazard at times because of how fast. It weans out, obviously. The first few hours are pretty intense, and then as it gets into midnight and 3 a.m, the track's a lot emptier, believe it or not. So that's sort of the main operation. But then we put on entertainment. Last year, every 2 hours we changed direction. So we did a big countdown, and then we changed direction, but it was themed. So the first one was like the conga line. And can you imagine 800 people connected up on the conga line? We've done Grease Lightning. We did Zombie, the song Cranberry Zombie at 4 in the morning when everyone's, not zombies, looking too flash. The chicken dance, all those sorts of things. There's a lot of entertainment to keep people entertained. The idea behind Relay is to celebrate survivors, remember those no longer with us, and acknowledge the word hope again, and now fight back against cancer and the hope that there will be cures, and that the hope that more people will live a life after a diagnosis. So that's what it represents, and a really poignant part of Relay is our candle bag ceremony. So the candle bag ceremony, we have these white bags, and there's a tent that people can go in and pay $5 for a bag, because that's all part of the fundraising, and they decorate it in honor of a loved one. And then we put a tea light candle in it, and at a point in the night, all of the bags get lined around the track. And then we have a ceremony where it's really idea is to just bring what's been a hyped up, amped up, go, 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 energy, energy plus. Just bring it down a bit, and let's just get back to, you know, let's just allow this moment to be what it needs to be, and that is to give people the time to acknowledge and hold in their hearts their loved ones no longer with us. And it's a very, very moving moment of Relay. You can imagine the lights are out and the track is just lit with these bags, and we, because we have so competitive teams, next year I'm actually going to stop the lap tracking. We're actually going to pause it for 15-20 minutes and get everyone to just bring it in. So then we have the ceremony where Bob Francis does a poem each year. We say a few words. We often have a guest speaker. And it really just take that moment, and then we walk the track in silence.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, and we just hold space for and just take in the loved ones and really hold space for that. The one of the local band pipe, you know, the pipe bands played as well. So we do a silence and then we have them play. So it's, you can imagine it's very, very, very moving. Then we have a job of trying to then slowly bring that energy back up again too, because we want, you know, people have only, they've still got another 9 hours to go. So, so yeah, that's a really, really special part of Relay. And then the idea behind it is that the teams fundraise. So last year we had a target of 120,000 when we had about 45 teams register and over 700 participants. Phenomenal result, phenomenal, amazing. And collectively the teams raised over $150,000.
Wow.
So on the morning of the event we hit our target. And yeah, you can, yeah, it's just phenomenal, phenomenal. And just, I bawled my eyes out. I had no voice and I bawled my eyes out in the closing ceremony. It wasn't pretty, no sleep. I'd been up since 7 a.m. the day before. And also because it had been our first event, you know, we run all of that. We do all of that in-house. And it was 7 months, 7 months of preparing, working hard. There were many, 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 many hours put into that. But it was so worth it when you saw everyone having a good time, and the feedback surveys came back with such positive feedback. There's always things you want to change and tweak, which we can do this time. So I really want to create that event again and work out those little tweaks to create even a better event. So that is back 29th, 30th of March, 2025. We are just about to officially launch into the community. So you're hearing it first, folks. and yeah, it's a big, I've got 5.5 months of some pretty big hours to get into operation and execute. But I would do it tenfold just for people to experience what we're going to do.
Where do you hold it?
Clareville Showgrounds.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's just, even if people want to come down for the opening ceremony, just be part of that. Last year too, we did so the survivors, at the start of the opening ceremony, the survivors then follow a pipe band. And if you're a cancer survivor or you're a carer of someone, you get to walk the first lap.
Oh, nice.
That opens it. And we've got this banner, which cancer survivors can put their handprint on. And we take that around the region in the lead up to the event. So even if you're not going to be there, if you're a cancer survivor, you can put your handprint on there and be proud and own that survivorship, which is a really, as we talked about at the start, that survivorship space is not acknowledged. So it's really great opportunity for cancer survivors to put their handprint on there. And then they get to walk the first honorary lap. And then what we did last year is we actually had our service people. So if you were fire, police, ambulance, military, anyone who has served our community in that, we gave them the opportunity to walk a lap. And that was just, it's just highlighting and showcasing all the special things that make the Wairarapa what it is. And it puts it literally in one platform. It's really, really special. So I really would love to see more community groups, if there's, you know, dancing groups or singing groups or anything like that who want to perform at Relay next year, then for them to get in contact with us, because there's a huge opportunity to have a great stage and platform to be able to do and be part of this event.
So what's your contact details for those?
Just Wairarapa Cancer Society, Facebook, socials, email, phone number, it's all online. You can absolutely contact us, and we would love to hear from anyone who wants to be involved.
Yeah, it sounds like an awesome night. So if you want to be a part of it, whether it's dancing, singing, whatever, entertaining, or being a part of the walking around the track.
Yeah.
Get in contact.
Absolutely.
If you want to have fun,
absolutely,
and enjoy something that is really
different.
Different. Yeah. Different.
Yeah, for sure.
Contact, yeah.
So those are our key. Those are sort of some of those iconic events. But obviously, if you're doing the maths, that still doesn't add up to keep the doors open. So we apply for grants. Some people are in a position to make a monthly donation to the Cancer Society. Some people leave gifts in their will. We are the recipient of bequests sometimes, which when people specify that is to go to the Wairarapa Cancer Society, that goes an incredibly long way. Mm. And the sad thing about bequests is that we often don't get to thank those people, because it means that they're no longer with us.
Yes.
We do offer the ability, if anyone wants to leave a gift in their will, then we would pay $250 towards getting the will drafted up, you know, written up, as a way of saying thank you. So that's always an option for people as well. It's some people want it to go towards certain things. Some people just want it to go to contribute to our operation, which, you know, goes a really long way in helping us keep our doors open, because we do get no government funding. And whilst some people might think, wow, especially when we talk about all the things we do, how do you get no government funding? And there's a part of me that's like, how do we get no government funding for all the things that we do? But the other part of me is like, I'm so grateful we don't, because we're not restricted to a box.
Mm.
We're not restricted to staying, you know, there's things that we won't spend, you know, money on or do or things for people. And you know, there is a path that I've got to stay within. But that is where, for example, end of last year, we had a family who had both parents had some health challenges, one with cancer, one not with cancer, but they had three young kids, and it was a pretty sad situation. And the best way we were actually able to help that family in this instance was organize a Christmas present for each kid.
Mm-hmm.
That was the best. Mm-hmm. There was no other way that family needed our support with our services, but we organized a Christmas present for each of those children. I think we spent about $30 on each child, so that on Christmas Day they could feel like a normal kid and have something that was for them, because their parents were not in a position to do that for them. And the joy on their faces when Elaine turned up with we wrapped them, we did everything for them, so they just had to pop it under a tree or whatever, and those kids had something. Helping people. There are people who, like me, crazy dog lady, love their pets, you know, but, you know, who need to travel for treatment, but then there's no one to look after their animals. So we've helped people pay for funding, you know, pay for getting their dog into the kennel or their cat into the kennel. You know, we try where we can to think outside the box to help people based on their situation. That's a pretty special. I mean, there's lots of other examples, but as a way of trying to explain it, that's a really nice way of not being government funded. Because can you imagine if we were, how many boxes I would have to tick to get that to happen? Whereas I'm able to just make those decisions with Elaine, you know, based on understanding the client's needs.
I want to touch on something that you just talked about, and that was, you said that sometimes people can't find places for their animals when they go to treatment.
Yep.
So in terms of them going to treatment,
yep.
So is there a service that they can...
Yeah, yeah, because obviously for some people it's all good and well, you know, needing to get treatment, but Wairarapa is not set up in a way to offer a lot of treatment or surgeries or radiation, chemotherapy, in our region. Mm. It's just we're not set up for it. There is an infusion unit that does some entry-level chemotherapies here, so some people can have treatment here, but the majority of people will go to Wellington. They used to go to Palmerston North as well, but when the health system got under the pump, like it has in recent years, very rarely are clients of the Wairarapa going to Palmerston North for cancer treatment. So Wellington is where it needs to go. Well, Wellington is now a two-hour drive on a good day without any traffic. So a lot of people engage the Wairarapa Cancer Society for our driving service. That is something we are really well known for. So our driving service is, the idea behind our driving service is that it's supplementary to what friends and family can offer. And our volunteer drivers, we've got about 45 drivers across the region, and they use...
Where's the region?
Region for Wairarapa.
Yeah, what is it? Where is it?
So Masterton, Carterton, Greytown, Martinborough, Featherston.
But not north of Masterton.
It's interesting. We're client-led on North Masterton, like Ikerehuna, Tararua, because some people would want to go to Palm. They're kind of on the cusp, and they can kind of choose which way they want to go, Palmy or do they want to come this way.
So we do work.
So our boundary for Wairarapa, in terms of Cancer Society, is that that's starting to cross over into Central District Cancer Society.
Okay.
But we have contact with them, and if there was a client that wanted to be under our care, then we would work with them to make that happen.
Okay, cool.
For sure, definitely. Yeah. So a lot of people have to travel out of the region. A lot of people are not confident driving in Wellington. It's getting more and more cluttered. Mm. We try to advocate for clients too. You know, getting a client request for an appointment at 8 a.m. on a Monday morning at Wellington Hospital, that's not fair. Most of the time, particularly, say, radiation treatment, they will try for clients in the Wairarapa to get in for an appointment on a Monday afternoon,
okay,
and then sometimes they have to stay down there for the week, and then they will be the morning's appointments on a Friday. So the idea is that they can be last on a Monday, first on a Friday, and then they're able to get more time back home.
Yep.
But it's hard when we get a request through for, you know, an 8 a.m. because that means a 5:30, 6 a.m. departure from the Wairarapa for those clients, but also our volunteer drivers.
Mm.
So our drivers are volunteering their time. They are police vetted. There is an onboarding process, and we have all of their car details and everything like that. We get a request in. We require at least 48 hours notice to make a drive happen. We're not an emergency service. This is something that we're trying to organise and to take some pressure off people. We can't do urgent, last minute. We try. There's a lot of heart that goes into our jobs, and we try, but we have to draw a line somewhere. Mm. And also we've got to respect our volunteers as well who are gifting their time to do that. And then we organise it, the drive with the volunteer, and then we give the volunteer all the details. They make contact with the client and confirm the pickup time and things like that. If we have a couple of clients that have similar appointment times and everyone's okay with being in the vehicle together, sometimes we might buddy up those drives. So in 2022, our volunteer drivers drove about 30,000 kilometres. In the last financial year, our volunteer drivers have driven just shy of 60,000 kilometres. So to say that our driving services demand is there is an understatement. And many of those drives in that last financial year were actually buddy up drives, because 2022-23, we were still under some COVID restrictions.
Mm.
So we were very much one driver to one client ratio, and really having those boundaries in place to protect everybody, because you've got to think, many of these people are having chemotherapy, they're immunocompromised, needs to keep everybody safe. So... And then part of our fundraising is that we reimburse the volunteer. So they go to the petrol station and there's a process there, and then they can fill up their vehicles up to $80 per drive. So we cover the fuel for that, and that's all part of what we're out there fundraising for. Mm. So you can imagine the cost of the petrol has gone up significantly in recent years, but that's what we fundraise for. So I'm not concerned about it at all.
Mm.
The main thing is that we are providing a service and helping reduce those barriers of accessing treatment, accessing getting to the doctor. Because otherwise, if we didn't do that, then some people wouldn't be able to get those appointments,
yes,
to get there. We do our absolute best. Some people who have radiation treatment, so radiation's only a 15-minute appointment, but it's every day. and often for 2 or 3 weeks, maybe even 5 weeks. So we do have a facility in Wellington through the Cancer Society called Margaret Stewart House. So Margaret Stewart House is an accommodation facility that's funded by the Cancer Society. And many people in the Wairarapa have benefited from staying at that facility. My own grandmother, who I touched on earlier, she even stayed there a number of years ago. And it's right by the hospital. So many people who have radiation treatment will get into Margaret Stewart House, and they are in there, and that's free. That's free for those people as long as they can get in there. That's incredibly under high demand, as you can imagine. But it's an amazing facility and a free facility for people, and they can have a loved one with them. So then they can go to their treatment. They're not having to do that commute every day and things like that. So that's pretty special to be able to have that. And yeah, our drivers will often take people to Margaret Stewart House, drop them off on a Monday, and then they will go back down on a Friday and pick them up and bring them home again, and then they get to enjoy their weekend at home, which is really important when you're in the middle of treatment, to be in your own bed, your own space, and all of that. So yeah, a huge shout out to our volunteer drivers, and we are always looking for more because the demand is there. And many of our drivers, you know, middle of the year, they go overseas and try and chase the sun, or you know, some of them aren't always, or some of them have certain days that they can do, which is totally understandable. So we are always looking for more volunteer drivers. If you feel that that's something that you could give back to the community, it's a really special, and actually our volunteer drivers and the experience that they give people and giving them a safe ride to and from are often the reason why people choose to leave a gift in their will to us. That is often a reason why it's huge. It's really huge because it reinforces how much it means to people to have had that service. But also that's something that they're able to give back down the track when that time comes. So our volunteers are an extension of our team, and they are our brand, and the experience that they give them our clients is phenomenal. So
you said that you have 45
volunteer drivers.
So how many volunteers do you have
on our books? We've got probably over 200.
Wow.
Yeah. So we've got essentially one team member per 50 volunteers to one team member ratio, which is pretty phenomenal. But for some of those people on our books, that might be that they just help out with Daffodil Day once a year. So our main engaged volunteers cover from our drivers. We've got oncology hosts. So there's a small pool of people who once a month or on a Wednesday go to the infusion unit in Masterton Hospital, where chemotherapy and treatments are being given, and they will help out with the nursing team in the ward, just whatever they can do, make cups of tea or button up gowns or whatever. So there's a group of volunteers there. We have our office volunteers. There's a handful. So if I need to take the team out for a training day or go to Wellington for work and see our colleagues in our division, or maybe it's a training day locally, then we get a volunteer in to cover the office so that the phone can still be answered and things like that. Or if we're low on team as well, I don't like the team not having many of us in there. So if it was just like, it's just me today, so I've got volunteers in there to help me out. So because I've got obviously a full workload, so they just help out around the office. We've got gardening volunteers. Mm-hmm. So they have little patches in the garden, the Hope Garden each, that they all look after. We do working bees about twice a year. So everyone rallies around and helps out with that. We've got our executive board. So our governing board are all volunteers, and many have been volunteers for a long time. Rob Irwin has just retired actually from our board, and he's been involved with the Wairarapa Cancer Society for well over 30 years. You know, absolutely dedicated, humble, beautiful, kind people who all have their own why, and they are all the people that I report to and try to keep happy.
It's been a great time today, this morning, Amber. Sorry, I don't know where the time's gone to.
Have we finished? I told you I could talk. I didn't even touch on, like, can I quickly touch on our services? Because that's cheap. I told you.
Might come next month.
I told you, part two. I know I can just ramble, but I'm super passionate. I'm just super proud, and it's just so important because we can't take away what I want to take away from people, and that is the pain and the fear of the unknown and the whole process of being told you've got cancer. But our job is to try and make things a little bit easier. Mm-hmm. So the things that we're known for in terms of our services is that one-on-one support. So Elaine will... Do you want me to call you weekly, monthly, come and see you in your own home? What do you need from me to support you? Elaine is incredible at advocating for clients. If they don't understand what's going on, if they, you know, need more information or whatever, she's incredible with that. We do counselling. Our counselling service is through the roof. Our support groups that we offer so people can get together, like the fear of recurrence one. Our driving service is a big one. Resources, you know, each booklet that we have costs $6 to have that booklet. Welfare support. Some people are in a position to drive themselves, but money's tight. So we might organise some petrol vouchers for them so that they can get themselves to their appointment or groceries or whatever. Those little extra things, those heart things that I talked about, the presents for the kids, the dog, you know, accommodation, those sorts of things, thinking outside the box within our means. We are restricted to, you know, amounts per client because otherwise I could end up, you know, like I could get out of control and I'd get in trouble. But it's really about understanding. And honestly, sometimes it's actually about walking through our doors and having a cup of tea and going, I feel heard. Sometimes it's don't underestimate the power of just hearing somebody and it's a safe space. We are not connected to the hospital, so we do rely on referrals. Self-referrals is our biggest way of getting in contact with clients, or the hospital team will often refer. So if you know someone who could benefit from engaging in our services, then I'd really encourage you to get them to reach out to us and connect with us. And we don't service children. But in terms of children cancer, that's a real specialty. But sometimes children are really struggling how mum's navigating her diagnosis or whatnot. So we might work with the family to get a specialised child counsellor and we might fund those four sessions. Again, it's thinking outside the box for those families. And I really want the community to feel really proud of who we are and how we do our work. That there's a lot of love that goes into it. And then when people are parting with their hard-earned funds and supporting our fundraising events, that these are the things that it's going back into. And of course our shade loan trailer as well, which has gazebos, umbrellas, sunscreen that community events, not-for-profit events can hire from us over the summer months to stay protected in the sun and from the sun and things like that. So there's a lot and there's a lot more that we do, but I have to shut up now.
But thank you. And as you said about coming into the summer months, don't forget, people, slip, slop, slap, wrap. It's really important. And if we have events and you need some shade, call Wairarapa Cancer Society.
Yeah.
There's a whole lot of resources there that they can offer for us to keep ourselves, our tamariki, our mokopuna safe when it comes to our sun. But this morning, thank you so much, Amber, for your time, your excitement, your passion for our community, really. So, yeah, go well today. And Susie, one more session to go.
One more session to go, yeah. Yeah, that was great. Thanks. I didn't realise that there's so much out there that Cancer Society do as well. The counselling is great and... Yeah, just encourage anyone that's got any questions or need that support, just, you know, give you a call.
Absolutely.
Fantastic.
Number 37, Te Ori Ori Road.
That's the one.
Yeah.
Open door policy.
Open door policy. Thank you so much once again, Amber.
Thank you.
And for all those out there in the community, have a great day today. It's going to be 22 degrees.
Yeah, 22. Make sure you keep up that water.
Yeah. Keep safe, people. And until next time, mā te wā.
Mā te wā. Mā te wā.